Good afternoon. My name is Mandy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Federal Health Quarterly and Health IT Landscape Quarterly Update conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Pinnock, Vice President, Informatics Client Management at Premier Incorporated. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Mandy. Welcome, everyone, to our quarterly update. And just to remind everyone, we'll go through the presentation first that hopefully you all have accessed via the web link. And then at the end of the presentation, we'll open it up for questions. Our presenters today will be Nicole Silverman from Booz Allen Hamilton, Danielle Lloyd, and Linda Rouse from our Premier Advocacy Office in Washington, D.C. So with that, I will turn it over to Nicole to get us started.
Great. Thanks, Kathy. And thank you all for joining us for our quarterly update. We have a lot of information in the deck, but a lot of it we can go through really quickly. So we're going to start and make sure that we leave plenty of time for questions. The first topic we're going to discuss is the Inpatient Prospective Payment System Final Rule. So on slide 2, you can see the sort of summary of the rule. I think the good thing from a term from point of view of being predictable is that the final rule did not substantially change anything related to quality and quality reporting from what was put out in the proposed rule. So if you listened in May, this is going to be pretty much the same kind of review. What they did in the final rule is they added 4 measures, 2 chart abstracted and 2 structural. They retired 1 measure and harmonized 2. They did not add any hospital acquired conditions that had to be reported and for which hospitals could potentially be penalized in their payment. And they're continuing to discuss alternative methods for submitting data to CMS to relieve hospital burden. So moving to slide 3, you can see the 4 measures that were added. They're all NQF endorsed. And again, this is for the fiscal year 2010 reporting / fiscal year 2011 payment determination, because the way these things hit your payment is always a year lag. So the first 2 measures that are chart abstraction are post-op urinary catheter removal on post-op day 1 or 2 and perioperative temperature management. And then the 2 registry measures, which are similar to the cardiac surgery registry measure that currently exists, are participation in a systematic clinical database registry for stroke care and for nursing sensitive care. And again, on those registry participation measures, a hospital would get so-called full credit if you just answer yes or no. So if you don't participate in one of these, but you answer the question, and that I believe goes directly through in your in QNET, then you get full credit for those measures. On slide 4, you can see the 2 measures that CMS harmonized. They were in 2 different sets, and NQF came forward and said, hey, they're substantially the same. So CMS decided to combine them under the new NQF name, which is death among surgical patients. What they will do is report the results in both the PSI, the patient safety indicator set, and the nursing sensitive set, but it'll be the same measure just reported in 2 different places within Hospital Compare. And then on slide 5, CMS put forward their chart validation process that they're going to move to for the fiscal year 2012 payment determination. So they're kind of giving everyone a lot of notice. This will be so for 2 years from now, essentially. And they're doing this to improve the reliability and the validity of the data, especially because they're publicly reported and they want consumers to be able to make decisions from these data. And there's been some criticism in the past that they haven't done a good enough job in delving deeply into this to see if the data are reliable, and so they are addressing that by asking hospitals for more charts to review. They're going to select more cases, but they're going to do it on fewer hospitals in every year. So what they'll do is they'll randomly select 800 hospitals from all the hospitals that have successfully submitted at least 100 cases across all measure topics. And there's a couple year lag on when they pick that for when they look at actually validating. Then, and the reason they did 800 hospitals is they figured that over a 5 year period, because they're randomly selecting, they should get to every hospital because there are roughly 4,000 hospitals across the country that are submitting. However, it's important to note that because they select these 800 hospitals randomly but independently every year, it doesn't mean that, you know, if your hospital's picked in year one that you wouldn't get picked in year two or year three, because each time they do it, it is random. It is possible to get picked, say, for 2 years in a row and then not be selected for 4, 5, or 6 years. That's just kind of really the luck of the draw. Then from that sample of 800 hospitals, CMS is going to randomly select a stratified sample of 12 cases per quarter. So instead of just taking 5 cases across all topics, they're going to stratify them across the topics with no more than 3 cases each quarter associated with the same topic. So over the course of the year, they'll be looking at 48 charts, 48 cases, rather than looking at 20. And then the process will be roughly the same. CDAC will request the charts, and they re-abstract and match, but they'll be looking to match the numerator and denominator reported by the hospital for each measure, not at the data element level. Hospitals will have to meet a passing threshold of 75% match, down from 80%, and because all the relevant data elements to calculate the numerator and denominator must match to achieve measure match, and so therefore they kind of ratcheted down a little bit, made it a little bit easier for hospitals to meet that threshold. And as before, if hospital disagrees with what the CDAC has done, they have the opportunity to appeal to their QIO. And then for the fiscal year 2012 payment determination, CMS is going to select the 800 hospitals this July, or this coming July, and will only validate 3 calendar quarters, and then in subsequent years they'll go to a full calendar year of data that they're going to validate. Finally, on slide 6, CMS is continuing to signal that they're going to be taking a hard look at registries and EHRs as ways for hospitals to provide the data for, that make up the quality measures, and they're continuing to ask for comment. They are also working with the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT to identify and harmonize standards for EHR-based submission of 3 data sets, ED throughput, stroke, and VTE. So they have, I believe those have gone out for public comment that the Health Information Technology Standards Panel, known as HITSB, has drafted the quality in interoperability spec, and now they're getting comment, and then they have to work through that. They make some may make some slight changes, and then they will post that, and that's expected towards the end of this month or the beginning of October. And then CMS has to test if it can actually accept these data, because it's one thing for hospitals to be able to send them via EHR. It's another thing for CMS to be able to accept it. So what they're going to do is they're going to work with several EHR vendors to test, and they'll also need hospitals to work with the vendors to see if they can do this, and folks can self-nominate to CMS through December of this year. Now we're going to move on to the Outpatient Prospective Payment System proposed rule, which came out in July. Slide 8 has a summary of all the important points. I think the key things that are good news are that the rule doesn't impose any additional reporting requirements for calendar year 2010. There will be no new measures, the same 11 measures you're reporting now. You'll continue to report. And they also, you know, they've been looking at what can we do with these hospital-acquired conditions, and they still can't figure it out. So they are not going to extend that concept to the outpatient sphere. We're going to go over some of these in more detail, but some of the ones that I wanted to pull out that I'm not going to go into detail, that it's about bullet number 5, hospitals. They're moving towards asking hospitals, just as you do on the inpatient side, to submit the aggregate number of outpatient episodes of care so they can kind of do a test for completeness. So they're saying right now that hospitals can voluntarily submit this in calendar year 2010, but that aggregate population size will be required in the future, just so you're aware of that. And the other thing they're going to be doing is they're going to be finally putting this data up on Hospital Compare, making it publicly available. So moving to slide 9, as I mentioned, there are no additional outpatient measures in calendar year 2010. And they've, as they always do, put forward some measures that would be reported potentially in calendar year 2011 for the calendar year, should be 2012 payment. So those are in the appendix. If you want to look at those, they're substantially the same as the ones that they have continued to put in there. So they're still thinking about the same kinds of measures. On slide 10, you can see that they have proposed not to implement any sort of payment penalty for hospital outpatient healthcare associated conditions. And really, they're just struggling with this because if you look to the third bullet, there's difficulty in attributing the source of a healthcare associated condition to begin with. And if it's with an outpatient encounter that is even briefer, there is a lot of confusion there about how to do that and do that accurately. They're looking at potentially using risk adjustment techniques. They would obviously need to, just like they have the POA, present on admission, they'd need to develop a present on encounter. And then finally, they can't figure out how to adapt the outpatient prospective payment system payment structure to penalize, partially penalize an institution if they did have a healthcare associated condition. However, they are continuing to say, and you look at that last bullet, that this it has the wonderful acronym of HOPPAC. HOPPAC non-payment could be a key value-based purchasing strategy. So they are going to try to work through this, and I think they're not going to drop it. Slide 11, again, as within the inpatient sphere, they're looking at how can we use registries and EHR as alternative methods to collect data from hospitals to reduce burden. They're still not sure. There are, you know, a few steps behind on the outpatient sphere compared to the inpatient sphere, but they are looking at that. In slide 12, they are putting forth a proposed validation methodology here for the outpatient data. As you know, they have not yet formally validated the outpatient data, so they're putting forward something that ultimately will look a lot like what we just talked about for the inpatient data, but they're going to kind of have this interim step. So for the validation for the calendar year 2010, they're going to randomly select, they're proposing to randomly select a sample of 7,300 cases from the clinical warehouse, and then they're thinking that would be about 20 cases per hospital, so that would match what they're currently doing right now under the current RACDPU inpatient validation program, and then the records would be requested by the CDAG, and they would re-abstract, but they are talking about having agreement being calculated at the measure level rather than the data element level. Then beginning with calendar year 2011 reporting, so in two calendar years for reporting purposes, they would propose a methodology similar to what we just talked about. They'd randomly select 800. They would validate up to 48 patient episodes of care for each hospital that was selected. The one difference is they wouldn't stratify by measure or topic for the outpatient cases, probably because they just don't have enough to stratify. And then they're asking that hospitals attain at least a 90% reliability score. So I went through all that real quick, but I think it's largely information that has already been discussed or doesn't present a whole lot of new challenges for hospitals, but I'm going to stop here and let the Premier team comment further.
Thanks very much, Nicole. This is Danielle. I just wanted to fill you in on basically where Premier has been on these two issues. We submitted detailed comments on both of these rules. Those are available on our advocacy website, and I'm sure if you get to any of us at Premier, we can arrange to get you copies of those letters if you're interested. In terms of the inpatient PPS, we are supportive of both the harmonization of the two measures that Nicole discussed as well as the new SCIP measures. We do have an area of concern in terms of the new structural measures, the yes-no questions related to the registry participation. It's not that the measures themselves are not exactly complicated, since it literally is yes-no, but it does signal that CMS is considering adopting large measure sets from registries in the future. And as we've discussed on some prior calls, we remain concerned that such measures need to be completely transparent and something that can be replicated by both Premier and our members. We're also very concerned that if CMS endorses a particular proprietary measure, that is going to basically force you all to join and pay the respective fees, purchase certain software, et cetera, and add to the costs of the hospitals in terms of meeting the RACTPU requirements. So we continue to share that message with CMS in our comments this year. In terms of the electronic health records section, I just want to let you know that basically where we are is that we're a bit concerned that CMS's recommendation is basically automating the current manual process. And we think that this is really an opportunity for CMS to sort of step back and look at this from a different perspective. How can we leverage the possibilities of an EHR? And from our perspective, we think that they should be measuring compliance basically with embedded evidence-based care standards. So we can see compare the outcomes and costs of those who get the evidence-based care and those who don't get the evidence-based care. So we've recommended that, and we are working with HL7 to this effect, but we do recognize that CMS does need something in the short term and is not able to really take the fresh look right now because they have some obligations to move forward in this area. So we have said that their short-term approach in terms of VTE and stroke is appropriate, but we have concerns about them using the ED throughput as a test measures, because that, as we understand it, for many hospitals is oftentimes in the outpatient system that's not necessarily linked up to your inpatient EHR. So we recommended against that. I want to convey on outpatient that we did not really touch on the quality sections of the rule. As you heard from Nicole, there was not a lot of major information there, no new quality measures, no new hacks. There was some detailed information on validations and such. So we did not focus our time on that area. But certainly all of the measures that they are considering for the future will have another bite at the apple to comment there. So you will hear from us on that in the future. The last thing I did want to note, because we have been getting quite a few questions, that CMS is creating a care transition technical expert panel that will be looking at developing new measures, for instance, with physician follow-up post-hospital. And I did want to let you know that Eugene Kroc with Premier, one of our staffers, has been accepted onto that technical expert panel. So we will be participating in that, and we will share more information with you all as that proceeds later this month. So that's it for me, Nicole. Thanks.
Great. Okay. So now we're going to shift gears a little bit and move on to meaningful use. So we're on now slide 14. And over the spring and summer, there's been a lot of work going on, and you may be aware of it, in trying to define what meaningful use really is, because obviously there's a lot of people that are very interested in finding out. So we're going to just review here where it stands so far. Slide 14 is just sort of a refresher on how meaningful use fits into the Recovery Act. And I think, obviously, as you know, hospitals will qualify for substantial financial incentives, and physicians and eligible providers is the term, as well, if they can show that they're meaningful users of health information technology. And the only definition that was in the Recovery Act is in bullet two, that meaningful users had to show they use certified EHR technology, connected in a manner that provides for electronic exchange of health information, and the purpose has to be to improve the quality of care, such as promoting care coordination. So clearly that needs a lot more definition, and that's what all these various people have been working on, and specific committees we'll get into in a second. Hospitals that aren't meaningful users by 2015 not only will not be eligible for the incentives, but they're going to see reductions to a percentage of their market basket updates. So slide 15 talks a little bit about the two committees that are doing a lot of the work around meaningful use. They were actually set up to advise the Department of Health and Human Services on how to implement the entire HITECH Act, which is the portion of the Recovery Act that deals with health information technology. And these two committees are working furiously right now on a lot of issues, including meaningful use. And I just wanted to explain how they work together, because we'll talk about them a little bit in the next few slides. So the HIT Policy Committee is designed to recommend a policy framework, sort of what are the parameters that are necessary, and including standards for secure and private exchange of patient medical information, and they will make those recommendations to the Office of the National Coordinator. The Health IT Standards Committee then comes in, and when the Health IT Policy Committee kind of says, well, here's the framework, the Health IT Standards Committee is going to help fill it in with the specific standards, implementation specs, certification criteria. And so that's how the two committees are working together. They are meeting on a monthly basis, and their work groups meet more frequently. They are public, so if you are interested, you can call in and listen. But we do that so you don't have to. And we've been listening every month. So in June, the first step in the HIT Policy Committee trying to say, okay, we've got this meaningful use thing. What does this really mean? Well, let's look at the vision and what our kind of key goals are. And it's important because what they've done is everything kind of works off of these key goals. So their vision for meaningful use is enabling significant and measurable improvements in population health through a transformed healthcare delivery system. So it's going to transform the delivery system, and that's going to help us improve population health. The key goals, which have been adapted from the national priorities partners, so they didn't start from scratch, are improving healthcare safety, quality, healthcare quality, safety, and efficiency, engaging patients and families, improving care coordination, improving population and public health, including reducing disparities, and ensuring privacy and security. The achievable vision for 2015, kind of like when we're through with all of this, because that's the implementation timeline, 2011 through 2015, where could we be? There would be prevention and management of chronic diseases, reduction in preventable medical errors, decreasing health disparities and chronic conditions, enhancing care coordination, engaging patients and families, and improving public health. So that's kind of where they want to be in 2015. But moving to slide 17, when they kind of took a look at, okay, well, what's really out there, they realized we can't really get there right away because EHR adoption is still pretty low, and there really isn't that exchange, information exchange infrastructure available for providers to exchange data electronically. So they decided to do this in a stepwise fashion, starting with 2011 and then 2 years later kind of ratcheting up what their expectations are for meaningful use in 2013 and then even further in 2015. So in 2011, they just want to focus on providers using health information technology for data capture and sharing. So you can see here they want clinical data to be queried, trended, and reported using HIT-enabled quality measures. In 2013, they're going to ratchet it up, and they're going to say, okay, you should be supporting advanced care processes with decision support. And you can see there what they include in that. And then in 2015, they really want to get to improved outcomes. Slide 18 shows kind of where they went next. So they decided, the HIT Policy Committee put out in July a matrix, and what they did was they used those care goals that we were talking about two slides ago. You can see that on the left-hand side, and they're calling that the Health Outcomes Policy Priority. And then they had specific care goals. They put objectives for eligible providers, which are essentially physicians and hospitals. And then they came up with kind of, they're not really measure, I kind of think of them as measure statements. And they did that for 2011, 2013, and 2015. And they're really focusing right now, obviously, on 2011, because those are the ones that people are looking to understand where do we need to start. 2013 and 2015 are a little less concrete at this point. So if you look through, you can see how the goal is, or the policy priorities, improve quality, safety, and efficiency, and they combined in reduce disparities. They have certain care goals, and then they have certain objectives, and then they move to the measures. So looking in 2011, one of the measures, if you look down to kind of the bottom bullet there that's a little bit cut off, percentage of smokers offered smoking cessation counseling. That would move back through and match up with all these other things in this row of the matrix. And that is the first one that you can see here that really applies to the inpatient setting. So they've done this, and then they moved it over to the Standards Committee, and the Standards Committee took that and said, let's look at what measures are out there that are NQF endorsed that could potentially be collected by EHRs or be retooled and then could be collected by EHRs that would meet these measure statements. And they came up with a list, and that appears in the appendix to this presentation. If you flip to slide 43, you can see that there's a matrix that shows here's the measure, and then they've matched an NQF, as many NQF endorsed measures they could find that would meet that. So that's kind of how this is all moving through, and recommendations have been made to the national coordinator. Of course, what remains to be done is actually taking all of this and sort of putting it into a regulation, a rule. And both CMS and the Office of the National Coordinator will be doing that with meaningful use. And that will really provide us with the definition of exactly what does a hospital need to do in 2011 to meet that first level of meaningful use requirements. So moving back to the main part of the presentation, to slide 19, the Policy Committee also looked at how they're going to phase in the incentives. And if you look down to this chart, you can see that depending on what year your hospital qualifies as a meaningful user, when it starts, you are eligible for a different total incentive amount. If you are able to qualify either in 2011, 2012, or 2013 as your first year, you would receive a full 4 year of the incentive. So that's the full number of years you can receive incentives, and it would start at 100%. And in the second year, and this is part of the regulation that they want to give you the most money first, and then they're going to kind of slowly move it down to 75% of the total possible to 50%, sorry, to 25%. If you are not a meaningful user until 2014 for the first time, you would start at the 75% level. So the total amount of the incentive that you would receive would be reduced. And then, obviously, if you started in 2015, it would be reduced again. If you start after 2015, the penalties below the line take into effect. The other important thing that's on this slide to know is that, say, your hospital becomes a meaningful user in 2013. And if you remember on the slide we were just looking at, there were 2011 measures, and then I said there were 2013 measures in 2015, and it ratchets up each year. The question a lot of people had was, well, you know, what if it takes us a little while to be doing this implementation? If we think we're ready in 2013, do we have to already meet the higher standard that's going to be put in place for 2013? And so the answer was no. So essentially the measures that are labeled 2011 measures on the previous slide are really the measures a hospital would have to collect and report in its first year of being a meaningful user, and then the 2013 would be in the third year of a meaningful user. So if you started in 2013, you would only be held to the 2011 measure standards, if that makes sense. It's just the way that they published everything when they published the matrix. They hadn't made that decision yet, so they used the years rather than first year of adoption, third year of adoption, fifth year of adoption. So they do recognize that, you know, in your first year of adoption, if it takes you a little longer, you shouldn't be held to that higher standard, and that makes sense. Slide 20, you can see the next steps for the policy committee. I think the important thing is at the end, there's going to be a draft rule on federal incentive payments that will be issued by the end of 2009, and that will go out for 60-day public comment period. The final rule will be issued in early 2010. Now, at the same time, moving to slide 21, at the same time that a work group on meaningful use was working, there was another work group looking at specifically around certification, because remember, you need certified EHR in order to qualify. And so at this point in time, there's only one entity that can certify EHRs. It's called CCHIT, the Certification Commission for Health IT. And in looking at this, the certification adoption work group made a recommendation that that should be expanded to perhaps 10 to 12 different groups, and partially because they were worried that with this short time frame in having to have the EHRs certified, that CCHIT wouldn't be able to handle the number of vendors coming to them. So they wanted to kind of spread that out so there wouldn't be a traffic jam. What's important to know is that all of the different certification groups are going to use the same certification criteria that the government will set out, so it's not like one would have an easier bar than another. They're all going to be working off of the same page. And we have some more information here on certification. I think the important things are that the certification, the recommendation is certification shall last for 4 years, and also that there will be an alternative process for self-developed software. So if your hospital has homegrown software, it's not that you won't be eligible for incentives. There was a lot of hue and cry over that when meaningful use was initially being considered, because a lot of folks said reasonably that you know, some hospitals and physician groups have developed their own software. They shouldn't be penalized if it can meet the goal of electronic exchange of information. Slide 22 talks a little bit about the Standards Committee. We've already talked about that first bullet of the Standards Committee matching NQF endorsed measures to the sort of measure statements that the Policy Committee had created. They also have a Privacy and Security Work Group, which is making recommendations on compliance with HIPAA privacy and security rules when implementing EHRs. Now I'm going to stop here, and the Premier team is going to talk about their efforts here and specifically around their Health Information Technology Collaborative.
Thanks, Nicole. Hi, everyone. This is Linda in the D.C. office. And this, the first Premier slide that you see, we kind of inserted a few in the middle of the Booz Allen deck. But talking, we have a CIO a collaborative that we've formed. It started earlier this year in direct response to getting our hospitals as prepared as possible to take advantage of the HIT incentive payments and to allow our CIOs to share knowledge and share best practices. And we could also utilize their expertise to influence the policy and regulatory making process here in D.C. as this thing moves forward. And as, you know, listening to Nicole's section of the presentation, you know, it's moving forward and moving quickly, and it's a lot all at once. So we're doing our best for Premier to have our alliance members positioned so that you all are ready when you need to be to implement HIT and be meaningful users. We have a steering committee. On the next slide, I mentioned a few of the things we worked on this summer. We have a steering committee of the HIT Collaborative who really helped formulate our comments on regional exchange centers, as well as the first draft of the meaningful use matrix earlier this summer. We actually had our steering committee come to Washington, D.C. for a day in July and meet with Dr. Blumenthal to go over some of the questions and issues we had with the meaningful use matrix. We actually met with Speaker Pelosi's staff and the National Governors Association, as well as the National Quality Forum, because, you know, again, all the quality measures that are going to be coming into play to be meaningful users, there's a lot of kind of intersection on different issues between HIT and quality that need to all come together at the same time. We had a great conversation with him. We followed up with him. And also for his suggestion, we met with Tony Trenkel over at CMS, who's going to be in charge of doing the rule at CMS that will help define hospital-based professionals as well as, quote, what a hospital is. We have a lot of issues of hospitals within hospitals who might have the same provider number but would have incurred different costs for their in terms of HIT. And we want to make sure that all those examples are that CMS is aware of them so that the appropriate facility is getting the HIT incentive payment that they should be. We also have monthly WebExes. We have about 150, I think, right now, CIOs signed up. So if you're interested, you're welcome to talk to me separately to make sure your CIO is part of it, or if not, how we could get him more engaged. We've gotten a lot of good feedback about our website and about the monthly calls that we do and WebExes for the collaborative. On the last couple of premier slides, I listed out some of the key issues that we have with meaningful use. Most of them were around needing more clarification, especially CPOE being a good example on, you know, what percentage. Is it the percentage of physicians that are using CPOE, or is it the percentage of prescriptions that need to be done through CPOE? Because that could be drastically different and also affect how a hospital might roll this type of thing out if you don't already have it and use it. We also were concerned as far as our rural counterparts on being maybe a little bit further behind and what that would mean for them to implement EHRs and become meaningful users. And in that course of that conversation we have with Dr. Blumenthal, it came up on, you know, what if you're not ready at 2011 and you might not be ready till 2013, what you would be responsible for as being a meaningful user. And as Nicole said, you would be it kind of came out afterwards that you would be responsible for the first years if it was 2011, so you wouldn't be held to that higher standard if you were a couple years behind being ready versus 2011. As far as the issues with CMS, on that next slide you see hospital-based eligible professionals and the multi-hospital system issue. We actually just did extensive follow-up comments to Tony Trenkel and his team, giving several examples and suggestions on things that already exist in different states that they could look at for multi-hospital systems, and giving them some very clear definitions on what we feel would be appropriate for defining hospital-based eligible professionals. And that letter is posted on the HIT Collaborative website if you're interested in getting a little bit more detail on what we were talking about. On the last premier slide, wanted to make you aware of a project that we've got going. Randy Thomas with Premier is heading this up, but we've engaged and hired Divergent, a small consulting group, to work on a roadmap of sorts so that we can share that with our hospitals on what steps they need to take to be positioned to become meaningful users as soon as possible. Hopefully all of ours will be in 2011, but if not, giving you guys some specific examples and steps that need to be taken now so that you can, you know, plan out to be a meaningful user at the soonest time possible. This project is just kicking off, and Randy's information is in that last bullet, and so if you've got some specific questions, you could contact her if you'd like to. And Nicole, that's all I had for HIT.
Great. Okay, so we're now on slide 30, and just wanted to make you aware of some rulemaking around privacy and security, and specifically HIPAA. So towards the end of August, HHS issued an interim final rule about breaches of health information, and this applies both to covered entities and business associates, and it relates to breaches of unsecured protected health information. So if you see down in the second bullet, unsecured protected health information is information that has either not been encrypted or not been destroyed. Those are the two acceptable methods for securing PHI per the Department of Health and Human Services. So if data are not secured in either of those ways and there is a breach, they've put out exactly what a hospital or covered entity has to do. So if the breach, you can see if a breach affects more than 500 individuals, the entity must promptly notify not only the individuals, the HHS secretary, and the media. If it affects fewer than 500 individuals, it would be reported on an annual basis. This interim final rules is effective 30 days after publication, so later this month. And it's important to note that HIPAA does not cover certain types of entities that may be working with protected health information, and one of those entities are PHR vendors. So the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, issued a similar breach notification covering PHR vendors that aren't specifically covered under HIPAA. It's important to be aware that as a covered entity, if you, for example, one thing I saw, if you work with a PHR vendor, and even if you say have a link on your hospital or health system website to the PHR vendor, if there is a breach, you could potentially be involved in that as well. So it's good to be aware that these rules exist. And then we're going to just wanted to let you know that the next presentation is November 18th, and now I'm going to turn it back over to Premier for sort of a short summary of where we are right now in the larger health reform debate.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. This is Linda again. Before I go into a little bit on the health reform debate, I wanted to mention one thing about breach that Premier has been specifically working on. We actually are part of a confidentiality coalition here in Washington, D.C., and through that, our work with the coalition, we had some of our experts come up and meet with the Office of Civil Rights this summer specifically about this rule that we all knew that they were working on to talk about breach. And one of the issues was urging them to establish some sort of standard of harm so that there could be some sort of decision tree, if you will, what that breach is that the covered entity and the business associate can go through, and if there is determined to be harm to possibility of harm to the patient, whether it's through identity theft or kind of quote embarrassing information, especially if there's some sort of action that patient would have to take that institutes some sort of standard of harm, that would trigger the breach notification. And we are really pleased to see in the interim final rule a standard of harm was included, and we feel that was a very big victory for providers as well as for patients, so they're not inundated with kind of, quote, frivolous breaches. If one doctor pulls up the wrong patient record, realizes the wrong Joe Smith, he closes it and pulls up the patient that he really needed. You know, did the first Joe Smith really need to be notified? It was kind of the example we used a lot with OCR, and they were very open to that as they included a standard of harm in the breach in the interim final rule. And we'll actually be doing comments on the interim final rule just to reinforce all those points again and make sure that it stays in as it is currently. So just wanted to make sure that you were all aware of that. And then moving on to health reform, it's probably hard to do a short summary, but I'm going to start with what's been going on this week. As you know, Congress came back from their five-week August recess, and Senator Baucus on Tuesday laid out his framework and brought that to the, quote, gang of six. There's three Republicans and two other Democrats with Senator Baucus who have been kind of working together and having conversations all summer trying to negotiate some sort of bipartisan deal on health reform. And in the framework that Baucus kind of laid out on Tuesday, a lot of the things that Premier has been particularly active on and working with members and committee staff on language are all about quality, is value-based purchasing, readmissions, accountable care organizations, and bundling. I'm really pleased to see that those issue areas are covered in Senator Baucus's framework. And so now we're just kind of waiting to see what the rest of that bipartisan group is going to do as far as endorsing that or not. And Senator Baucus has also made it clear that he intends to release what's called the chairman's mark next week that will probably very closely mirror the framework he sent around on Tuesday and then move to markup in the Senate Finance Committee on September 21st. And then I don't know if everybody watched, but you're probably all aware that President Obama addressed a joint session of Congress last night, specifically talking about health care and what he would like to see in any sort of plan. He didn't talk in great detail about provider payment, just spoke to the larger concept of quality and improving efficiency and getting waste out of the system. But on the White House website, there is a bullet talking about his support of ACOs and readmissions and bundling. And we've obviously, through Premier's demonstration on pay for performance, we've been very active on value-based purchasing and working with the administration and Congress on language that would implement these concepts in an appropriate way for hospitals. So We expect something from Senate Finance Chairman Mr. Baucus next week, and then they'll mark up on the 21st. And then obviously Mr. Obama, I think, did a good job. He spoke mostly about the insurance reform issues for the most part, but I think did a good job as far as a, quote, I don't know if pep talk is the right word, but really trying to motivate Congress to get moving and to get moving as soon as possible on figuring out how to do health reform. He made it very clear that doing nothing is not acceptable. And that's where kind of health reform leaves off. I think the next couple weeks are really going to indicate which way this thing goes and whether it stays bipartisan or whether the Democrats are going to have to try to go it alone. So stay tuned on that one. And I think that's all. Do we open for questions or?
Yes, Mandy, can you please open the lines for questions?
Yes, ma'am. At this time, I would like to tell everyone, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, to ask a question at this time, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And you have a question from the line of Millie Seligas.
Hello?
Your line is open.
Okay, great. Hi, this is Millie Seligas, and I have a question. If we're going back to slide number 19, the eligibility time frame for the adoption of HIT, what is considered full? Do you have to have full adoption, or can you be in the phase of implementation, or, you know, how is that going to be judged?
Hi, this is Nicole from Booz Allen. I think that remains to be seen. Is, you know, it's you know, if it's really implementation, and, you know, if you have implemented, you know, certain modules but not others, is that count for implementation? Does what is fully implemented mean? So I think that, as far as I understand it, and Linda can correct me if she has more up-to-date information, but I don't think that has been fully resolved yet.
Linda, if you have any comments, you're on mute.
Nope, Nicole covered it.
Okay,
and we're good. Thanks.
Again, to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
Okay, Mandy, it doesn't sound like there's any further questions. I know there is a lot of information to absorb during that presentation. So if anyone does have questions after the call, you can feel free to contact me, and I'll get your questions to the right person. And my email is Kathy with a K underscore Pennock, P-E-N-N-O-C-K, at premierinc.com. So feel free to send me any questions after the fact if you think of them, and I will get them answered for you. So with that, Mandy, I will let everyone go, and thank you for participating in the call.
Participating in today's conference call, you may now disconnect.